Thank you. Be seated.
Court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in State Farm Lloyds versus Nicolau.
May it please the court, Mr. Paul Dodson and Mr. Van Houston will present argument for petitioner. Petitioner is reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Dodson will open for the first 15 minutes. Mr. Houston will present rebuttal for 5 minutes.
May it please the court. I have multiple points that have been raised in my brief, but the two that I'd like to spend some time discussing with you today involve the issues of the punitive damage award and the issues relating to the bad faith questions in this case. This is a case which arises out of a homeowner's claim, and under the policy involved, there is coverage where there is physical loss to the dwelling if, in this case, it results from water damage as a result of a leak, because there's an exclusion having to do with foundation movement and inherent vice. And in this case, it's quite clear that the only basis for avoiding that foundation movement exclusion is based upon the premise that some or all of it or part of it resulted from an accidental leak. In this case, there was a history of movement in the house. The Nicolau's house and had been repaired at one time based on the premise that there was not too much water under the house, but rather there was too little, that the house was settled as a result of drought. Subsequently, there was an allegation made, and engineering opinion suggested that it was possible that a plumbing leak was affecting the house. And at that point, State Farm, through Hague Engineering, requested that that issue be investigated. The Hague engineers involved were licensed engineers, and both of them had postgraduate degrees, and they went and they looked at the house. They spoke with the policyholders. They looked at some of the details of the house, noticing things as small as how the striker plate on a door, the wear on that, to see whether that indicated any history of movement in that particular location. And based on the work that they did, their background knowledge, the research they did into the types of soil, they concluded that there was no connection between a leak and any damage to the house. As a result of that report, State Farm paid sufficient money to make certain plumbing repairs, and a few months after that money was paid, then the repairs were made and additional testing was done by the policyholder. This information was forwarded to State Farm. State Farm, in its turn, asked the engineers to comment on it and see whether it changed their opinions. It did not change their opinions for factual reasons which were set out in their response. And based upon these reports, State Farm indicated that although they could pay the plumbing repairs, that they had reason to believe that the damage to the house was not the result of an exception to the foundation movement exclusion, and they denied the claim. The case went to trial. Jury made findings that were against State Farm, not only on contract issues, but on tort issues as well, even to the point of awarding punitive damages based upon a finding of malice on the part of State Farm. And what we have here is a question of whether there was legally sufficient evidence to justify either the punitive damages or the tort damages which were assessed. And I'd like to start with what I think is perhaps the easiest issue to resolve, and that is the question of the punitive damages. This court has recently held in the Alexander versus Walmart opinion, and more recently in Morial, that it takes more than committing a tort to justify an imposition of punitive damages. The court in those two cases looked specifically at the issues involving gross negligence, which on the hierarchy of attitudes behaviors that justify punitive damages at the bottom. If something does not rise to the level of gross negligence, it clearly will not rise to the level of either knowing misbehavior, that is, knowing that what you're doing is wrong, or intentional misbehavior, that is, intending not to do merely the act, but intending to cause harm, or even the most serious aspect, the notion of malice, that is, actively trying to cause physical injury, death, or as this court put it at Morial, financial ruin. And in this case, that objective basis of harm, which is essential for any award of punitive damages, totally missing. In this case, there is no question that health issues are never a concern or never at risk. There's no question of anybody having died. And there's no question of there being any financial ruin involved on the part of the Nicolaus. The closest that was suggested in the briefs was that one of the witnesses thought that by delaying payment, that the cost of repair of the kitchen had become more expensive. On its face, this does not rise to the level of financial ruin. And more significantly, and more basic perhaps in this case, the fact that the jury rejected that argument.
Does it make any difference? This is a case where the jury found malice instead of a gross negligence case.
Well, in this case, quite frankly, what this means is they've bitten off a good deal more than they have to bite off on to get a finding of gross negligence. And if the conduct does not rise to the level of gross negligence, a fortiori, it's not going to be malice.
Well, is extreme risk of harm, which is an essential element of gross negligence, a malice finding upon which punitive damages is awarded?
Yes, sir, it is, under both the statute, which defines malice, expresses that in terms of the injury to the body or to property, is an essential element of finding malice. And the jury was instructed in those terms.
You're saying an insurance company can never be malicious?
I'm not saying that at all, Your Honor. There are certainly could be circumstances where their conduct is such that they're out to get an insured. I'm not going to say that's an impossibility.
That would meet the definition.
I think that's a rough paraphrase. It's a very serious. Not only is there that mental aspect that has to be involved, but there has to be some very serious conduct, seriously adverse harm to the policyholder before
so
that.
They just don't want to pay a small claim. And I can really afford it one way or another. I can repair my own car. Then it can't be malicious.
That's the definition of malice, and I think that's if it does not entail that financial ruin, if the economic aspect is what we want to focus on in that in your example, then that is not going to provide a basis for any sort of punitive damage based on finding of malice, even if the jury finds it. If that basic threat, that type of damage is not there, then there ought not be any recovery. And I think perhaps that's the simplest and most direct way of rebutting the notion that any sort of common law punitive damages are appropriate in this case. And that's just talking about one aspect of what's required in order to have some sort of additional damages, something more than actual damages, because it's not merely the type of harm that has to be at risk, which is missing here. But additionally, there has to be an appropriate mental attitude. It's not enough that serious injury can result. With a malice finding, you have to, in effect, know that's what you're trying to do, which is a little bit more serious than just the tremendous carelessness that's involved with gross negligence. And when you start to talk about the mental aspects of the case, this sort of provides a connection, at least as I see it, talking about the other part of the case. Is there bad faith in this case? Did the plaintiffs meet their burden of showing that there was no reasonable basis for their denial of what I would shorthand call the foundation claim? Now, this is, the court has established early on in Arnold, that it's not enough that the jury disagree with you on the contract claim. You know, the jury has disagreed with us here. We've got some complaints about the charge, but that's not where the action is on this particular issue. The question is whether, in this case, there was no reasonable basis for denying the claim. Now, I think it's very clear that in this case, if nobody were bad-mouthing the Hague Engineering, that this would be a simple case. We have their report. Their report provides a factual basis for the information that is needed to evaluate the policy. That is, their report finds that there is no relation between the leak and any sort of damage to the house. And that's the critical analysis, because the plaintiffs agree their claim is based upon foundation movement, which is on its face of the policy is excluded, with the only exceptions being related to accidental leakage.
The allegation that Hague Engineering is predisposed to deny or define non-covered claims is what distinguishes this case from Lyons?
That is certainly the distinction that is being sought to be made here.
And why is that a good distinction?
It's not good because it goes back to the basic formulation which is set out in Harmon. There has to be, in this case, no reasonable basis for accepting, relying upon, using that Hague report. Now, is it sufficient to say that they are predisposed? Well, predisposition is somewhat of a loaded term. What does it mean in the facts of this case? Does it mean that they are simply going to go into a case and, regardless of what they see, say that there is no connection? Well, that's not what the evidence we have here shows. What we have here is a case where we have people who have the qualifications. They are degreed engineers. In fact, have masters, both Mr. Teasdale and Mr. Weathorn. They are licensed by the state. In terms of their qualifications, they are not suspect. So the question is, well, what about the fact that, as Mr. Cooper put it, they generally find that there's no connection? Sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. Well, first of all, are they wrong? My thought is, I know there's some policies out there. If somebody had a policy in Texas like they do in California that covered you for an earthquake, well, I don't think anybody would fault an insurance company that sent out an engineer to investigate a claim. They thought that earthquakes were pretty rare in Texas. Be kind of a goofy engineer if they sent out if they didn't think that. Now, I guess that's a predisposition, but certainly that's not something that's going to rise to the level of suggesting some sort of terrible motivation or ignorance or some other fault of the engineer. And in our case, what we have is engineers who are familiar with academic studies, including specifically those done at the University of Texas at Arlington, which indicate that very rarely do leaks from a sewage system cause damage to a house. So,
if the evidence were such that the jury believed or disbelieved Hague Engineering and believed the opposing experts and inferred from the evidence that was presented that State Farm had hired Hague Engineering for the express purpose of having a basis upon which to deny claims, would that present a factual dispute that we would have to defer to? Would that be some evidence of no reasonable basis?
Not in this case, Judge.
Well, I'm not necessarily, I'm not talking about this case necessarily. You say this is a case of no evidence under the Lyons standard, but can you conceive of a case where an insurance company would hire an expert for the express purpose of having an expert report upon which to deny a claim, and where the jury, believing that, could find no reasonable basis to deny the claim, and we would have to affirm that based on some evidence of no reasonable basis? Or are you saying that we ought to look at the fact that the expert's got a degree, has relied on some other reports and that sort of thing, and that disposes of the matter as a matter of law?
Well, certainly in this case, I think it disposes of the issue as a matter of law. I certainly don't have to. It's not essential to my point, to my case here, to suggest that a ill-motivated insurance carrier ought never be held and would be in bad faith if they go out and have a not merely a result-oriented seeking for a way to find a denial. It may be, even though they're seeking that, there's still a reasonable basis for denial. And even if they may have poor motivation, but there's more to it than that under the Arnold formulation. They may be ill-motivated, but there still has to be no reasonable basis for denial, and they have to know it. And I suppose, under your example, what we would be seeing is a case where it would be the case where the insurance company would fall down on that second part, that they know or should know that there is no reasonable basis for denial. But that would not be enough to prove the first issue for the plaintiffs, that there is no reasonable basis for denial. Even an ill-motivated person can do what's right occasionally.
The expert report itself would not be a reasonable basis to deny it, but you're saying if there was a reasonable basis, that would...
It would simply depend upon the terms of the report. And I, certainly in this case, what we have is something which went out and looked at the specifics of the claim. There was an investigation into the history of the claim, appreciation for where the house was relatively higher, which was distant from the leak, contrary to what you would expect based on basic principles of soil mechanics and the way clay soil behaves in the presence of water. In this case, what we have are those objective facts that are set out by the engineers and form the basis for their conclusion. And it's a conclusion which relied on the UTA studies and even the other engineers who were retained by the plaintiffs agreed that those UTA studies were reliable and can and should be relied upon by engineers. So,
any other questions?
Yeah, Mr. Dawson, just a couple of questions. I know your time is up, but is there any other evidence, either offered by yourself or by the plaintiffs, that puts in issue whether or not Hague engineers were predisposed to their conclusion, other than that this is what they usually say?
To answer that, the only other predisposition would be the fact that they relied upon the sorts of studies, academic studies, which came to that same conclusion.
Okay, so what we're left with is, because Hague engineers generally come to the conclusion that foundation damage is not the result of plumbing leaks, the question is, as a matter of law, can that permit an inference of predisposition? And for you to win on the bad faith issue or the no reasonable basis for denial issue, we would have to determine as a matter of law that an engineering firm that generally comes to this conclusion cannot, as a matter of law, raise an inference of predisposition.
Yes. I think the question is with whether an insurance company presented with this information, let's assume that, aware of that background, whether the engineer's reports, therefore, cannot under any circumstances constitute some evidence of a reasonable basis for denial.
To get to that, then, who would have the burden to challenge that predisposition? Would in the burden of persuasion, or the burden of proof, if you come to a question as to whether or not the engineers, the report upon which the insurance company relies, has in its background generally concluded the result the insurance company is relying on, would it be the insurance company's responsibility to come forward and give the basis for why they generally, the engineering firm generally comes to that conclusion? Or would the plaintiffs have to continue on their burden to establish why that report is not reliable? Do you understand my question? I'm trying to figure out where we go once we have this notion that they generally conclude this. What happens after that?
I think that very clearly has to be the burden upon the plaintiff. It is not enough to show that there is a predisposition. That is certainly not synonymous with saying, which as is required by Arnold, that there is no reasonable basis for relying upon. A mere predisposition, in this case, for example, or in other cases which are readily determined. A plaintiff might show a predisposition, but if that predisposition is based upon actually, sound engineering principles, sound scientific principles, then certainly the plaintiffs have not met their burden of proof to disprove that the report or the would constitute a reasonable basis for denial.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Russell should name to present argument to respondents.
May it please the court, I'm Russell McMaines, co-counsel for the respondents, Dr. and Mrs. Nicolau. The homeowners in this case, who we contend, the jury found, were victimized by the insurance company's refusal to pay what they were obligated to pay under the contract and because of their conduct of an investigation that was essentially, as we contended, and I believe the evidence will raise an inference, was designed to be essentially a sham and cover up for their predisposition toward denial of the claim in the first place. and the evidence in the record is rather replete with regards to that. Needless to say, and I'm sure it will come as no surprise to the court, that I disagree with only a number of the factual characterizations as well as the legal arguments of opposing counsel, but articulated, for instance, in the Court of Appeals opinion itself, and documented in our briefing and never responded to by the other side at any time, is a statement that Mr. Krismer, who is one of the people who was actually attempting to repair the problem out at the Nicolaus premises, testified that Monty Murray, the State Farm Lloyds adjuster at the scene, this is at the scene initially called, was not interested in hearing the history of the house regarding foundation problems, that they did not isolate the leak or determine the severity at that time. They knew there was a leak. They knew there were plumbing problems. They knew that was covered. All that was established. In point of fact, from the inception of this claim, State Farm issued a reservation of rights. From the inception of this claim, before they had any information at all, they basically said, we're not sure we're going to pay this claim at all. Then they secondly, when they got the report of Maverick Engineering, which is the first people that their own people had basically contacted with regards to this, when they came in and said that there are substantial water leaks on the premises, substantial plumbing leaks, and then after that, and concluded in their report that they may well be due to, that the foundation movement may well be attributed to that, that they recommend that there are some other testing needs to be done. None of that testing was done before the Hague engineers were then summoned, as there is a letter in evidence in the file that was introduced at trial, which the jury obviously heard and believed, which basically says, we have the report of Maverick Engineers on their conclusions. We're going to seek a second opinion from Hague Engineering. Mr. Ralph Cooper, who was the one who authored that letter, said that he knew from the outset that Hague Engineering was disposed to hold that there was not any causal relation between any kind of foundation damage and plumbing leaks or sewer leaks of any kind. That he knew about that at the time that he hired them. It's rather unusual, I suppose, in the annals of bad faith jurisprudence that we have an adjuster or supervisor who is so candid about the fact that he hired someone specifically for the purpose, as the jury was entitled to believe from the evidence, of creating a fact question on coverage and then adopted to the exclusion of all other evidence their report, which he has said repeatedly in subsequent correspondence that he adopted Hague Engineers' conclusions. Hague Engineers didn't do any kind of pressure testing, didn't do any kind of examination at the time of the initial investigation of the premises. They walked around the premises. The initial adjuster that was sent out there didn't want to know about the history of the house.
Your argument then is that under the record there is no reasonable basis for their relying on that report.
Absolutely, Your Honor. That they had absolute indication and evidence in their file, Mr. Cooper did, and knew from the manner that the investigation was conducted at the time, that there was nothing here, there was no dispute here, that there were significant plumbing leaks, that there was significant foundation damage, and that there was a potential causal nexus. What he said was, I'm going to hire somebody who I know is going to probably find that there is no causal relationship in order to deny coverage. That's what the jury was entitled to find. That's what they did find. Thus, the question at issue initially in the bad faith examination is whether or not an insurer is entitled to manufacture a coverage dispute in order to avoid bad faith liability as a matter of law. That's their position. And we reject that position. We think it's rejected on the face of the line, sir.
Mr. McMains, the modern litigation is characterized perhaps by higher guns on both sides in legal disputes and effectively, your argument would mean any time parties on each side hire an expert witness whose opinions conflict, that in every event, bad faith is decided by the jury and not reviewable under a no evidence standard under Lyons. Would you agree with that?
Well, with the additional fact that in this particular case, that it is admitted that there is that predisposition existed at the time of the hiring.
Sure, I understand. But is that required?
The question here is the role of the jury. That is true, Your Honor. I believe that one of the principal questions here is, does the jury have a role in deciding bad faith disputes? If the position of the court is, which I believe is contrary to what Your Honor's opinion in Lyons would suggest, if the position of the court is that the mere creation of a fact question by an insurance company that's set out to do so, and in which there is evidence from which that may be inferred, if that is enough, then in fact, the so-called bona fide dispute notions articulated in Domingos and followed through in Lyons have basically engulfed the notion of bad faith to the point of emasculation. Because essentially what the court is saying is, all you have to do is find out a way. You can be wrong. You have a right to be wrong. But you can set out with the intention of creating a factual dispute on coverage. That's their function. That's what they're designed, that's what they're going to do. And that's basically what the evidence in this record will support. And that in and of itself means that as a matter of law, there is no jury. So their position is the jury has no role in deciding bad faith questions when there are hired guns that are hired. The mere fact there are hired guns is sufficient. That's basically the position that is taken not only by in the briefing explicitly, but also in the amicus brief by Hague Engineers itself.
Assuming that you go out to hire a hired gun, it doesn't mean that the report is wrong, or that your reliance on it is not justified. What evidence is there here that, besides the fact that they did that they shouldn't have done?
Well, Your Honor, there is a substantial amount of evidence. Of course, the findings of the jury establish breach and establish that, in fact, the damage was due to the plumbing leaks. That issue has not been, as I understand, granted for review, although I understand the court has jurisdiction.
The question is whether a reasonable insurer would have denied this claim, and what evidence that is there that no reasonable insurer would have done this?
Well, the examination of the record itself does show that the letters that were offered, that are in evidence, merely said that I accept Hague Engineering's position, period. That's what he continually wishes to assert. I accept Hague Engineering's position. There is no attempt to justify or explain away the presence of the leaks. There is no attempt to explain away noticeable defects in the course of the investigation, all of which was called to the attention of the jury in the course of our experts' testimony as well. So that the jury is the one who has the ability to decide, in my judgment, and what I understand Lyons to say, the question of whether there was really a bona fide or a manufactured dispute.
If a physician or a lawyer is accused of not behaving in a reasonable manner, ordinarily there has to be some expert testimony about that. But your view is, in the case of whether a reasonable insurance company would have done this, whether there was a reasonable basis for denial, that you put on the evidence and then the jury decides. But you don't have to have any sort of evidence that this is not a reasonable way to make a decision.
Well, there was expert testimony in this case, Your Honor, about the unreasonableness of the manner of the investigation and the unreasonableness of the predisposition to the exclusion of examination of other things that needed to be done in a bona fide investigation. The question of the bona fides is the essence of the issue. And the question is, who is it that determines that?
In other words, one of the engineers in this case testified that Hague just basically committed malpractice in going about their report.
Well, not in those terms, but effectively in terms of noticing what they didn't do and what they weren't concerned with. They wrote their initial report, and everything they wrote after that was merely designed to bolster their initial conclusion, which they admitted on the stand was predisposed to making a determination that there was no relationship between the foundation problems and the substantial plumbing leaks, of which they had actual knowledge that there were substantial plumbing leaks, but the isolation of them and the extent of them, they didn't pursue.
Let me see if I understand the facts in real simple terms, see if I'm correct on my own mind. They had an initial report that indicated other things needed to be investigated to determine whether it was a connection between the leaks and the structural damage.
Correct.
Instead of pursuing recommendations for or suggestions for investigating those other elements, they went over to Hague, and Hague went in also did not pursue any of those recommended investigations and wrote its report without any substantial basis, regardless of their credentials and their licensing and what have you.
That is what
the underlying work that was necessary to write a valid report. Is that what you're saying?
That is what the evidence will support, Your Honor, and will raise the inference of, with regards to the best way. And that's what we suggested. That, and that's what the essence of Lyons, as I understand the court's opinion in Lyons, because the continued discussion here is not blind reliance on an expert, or not the mere fact of the hiring of an expert, but notions of either justifiable reliance or notions of bona fide reliance. And those are the things that were called into question in this case. Those
what was the jury issue? It was just a broad bad faith.
The jury was asked the question, the ultimate bad faith question, Your Honor, with regards to that there must be no reasonable basis for the denial. It's interesting, the emphasis here is no reasonable basis. Our emphasis is no reasonable basis. But regardless of the inflection.
Well, let's say both. Let's say that after Lyons we should inflect both.
Correct. And so it's no reasonable basis for the denial of the claim. The denial basically could well have been determined by the jury to have occurred from the inception of the receipt of the claim, based on the testimony and the inferences in this record. That they were not going to pay this claim, and they set about to build a record to justify not paying this claim and forcing it into litigation. And that is what the record will support, and that is what we contend is the essence, really, of bad faith. Otherwise, if the mere argument or statement is that by the insurer, I relied on these experts, I don't know what they did, I don't even have to know what they did, don't care what they did, they're good people, and therefore I can rely on them, even though I knew they were going to say that there was no coverage. And there is more of an obligation.
This is a foundation settling, it seems to me, to be as much a science as any other field of physics. Is it not possible for experts in the field to come to some general conclusions about soil conditions, about weather conditions, about concrete, about reinforcement, that would lead the scientists to have a general consensus that plumbing leaks don't cost plumbing foundations? Consequently, you're going to find a large number of engineering firms that are going to be, quote, predisposed to concluding that plumbing leaks didn't do it. But that is not of any consideration, assuming that the scientists come down there and investigate like a scientist investigates. Let's assume that the scientist's predisposition to a conclusion does not permit an inference of unreliability. What evidence do you have before the jury that this report from Hague is unreliable and that, too, the insurance company had no reasonable basis for relying on this report? It seems to me there's two elements. One is the report's got to be unreliable, and two, the insurance company has to know it's an unreliable report, other than simply the knowledge that these scientists have a predisposition to this conclusion.
This is not just a softened question of predisposition. On the stand, these people could not recall a single instance in which they had found problems. They could not identify any instance in which they had found that there was any relationship, though they admitted that it is certainly possible. And that is certainly probable under certain conditions. They did not explore those conditions. They didn't take any soil samples. They didn't do any of the things that Maverick engineers, the initial engineers that had been employed, had requested that they do. They knew they didn't do any of those things. The insurance company knew that they didn't do any of those things. Rather, what the insurance company knew was they were going to produce a report which merely relied on the University of Texas at Arlington study, which simply says that plumbing leaks don't generally cause foundation problems. There is nothing in that study or any scientific principles that says they can't cause, and there were full scientific explanations for what they for the cause in this case that were explained. And in fact, the attribution of the substantially high moisture contents beneath the subsoil and then the foundation in this particular case were explained away by the Hague engineers in a manner in which their own testifying engineer at trial said was ludicrous. And that was the notion of condensation, which was ridiculous to account for the high levels of moisture content in the clay that was underneath the stratum of the foundation in this particular case. And these types of silly explanations are some of the things that the jury had a right to hear, had a right to decide.
Well, what troubles me is there is a gap between what was done, all of the things that was done, and how you characterize those, and whether that provides a reasonable basis. And it seems to me that you can't infer from what was done or not done that you were reasonable in relying on it or not. It seems to me there has to be a bridge there where someone who is an engineer or has some expertise in the area comes in and says, no reasonable person would rely on a report like this. You raise the specter of manufacturing reports, and it is certainly a real one. But how do you know that it's manufactured if someone doesn't come in and say, no reasonable person should rely on this report?
Well, that's the interesting problem, Your Honor, because what you're basically saying, what the other side is really arguing, is that at all times that the insurance company has a right, as a matter of law, to rely on an expert report, period. Once we get into the area of, is it an area that is appropriate for to solicit expertise, even though we know what the conclusion is likely to be?
No, I'm suggesting that you may call an adjuster or someone either with expertise in processing claims or expertise in engineering and say, would any reasonable person rely on a report like this? And get the answer no, and then you would have bridged the gap. Just as in a medical malpractice case, you say a doctor did this, 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 and the patient died, but you still have to have the bridge to know whether what he did was below the standard of care.
There was ample testimony in this case about what a reasonable investigation would entail,
Did any of your experts or engineers testify that under these circumstances, and based on the preliminary work that was done, the investigation that was undertaken, no, it would be unreasonable to rely on this report?
Basically.
Was there evidence to that effect?
Yes, Your Honor. It's referred to in our, we're saying that there is a fact question on it, and of course, that's what happens, and the question is, really, pyramid experts, what does it take to create a fact question on a bad faith question? That's really what is at the essence here. Their position of Hague Engineers as amicus and of State Farm Lloyds is simply that when we hire an expert, that we expect to get a report that says something particular, that the jury has no right to infer from those facts, along with others that are critical of the nature of the investigation and things that were within the knowledge of the insurance supervisor in this case, and the initial and threshold position reserving rights to deny claims before he had any information whatsoever, can they infer that he set out to attempt to build a cover-up for a denial of the claim that he intended to do from its inception?
How can they do that if they don't know whether the report was right or wrong? That's my problem.
In Biles, this court made the determination that even if there is a defense to a bad faith or defense to a contract claim that arises if the insurance company has already determined to deny coverage, then anything they do after that is really not relevant to the bad faith question.
And that's seems to underlie your position here, as counsel mentioned earlier. If they go about it in a bad way or for a bad motive, that really is dispositive of the bad faith issue, even if there would have been grounds to deny it if they'd gone about it in a good way. Is that?
Well, that's part of it. And of course, there are findings on the exemplary damages with regards to the malice findings and these that are all interrelated to the manner in which the investigation was conducted. Was determined to be, and most of the courts that have ever considered this issue outside this state or inside this state have talked about that you can look at the manner and the bona fides of the conducting of an investigation, and if it is intended to be, if it looks to be results-oriented, if there is evidence from which the jury is entitled to infer that there are clearly bad faith implications. allegations that raise jury questions for their determination. The jury should be the one to decide the bona fides of that dispute. We do not have a case here. This is not a case where the jury didn't decide and that and we were here trying to overturn the jury decision. This is one in which there was an NOV by the trial judge. And the basis of the NOV was simply that they relied on an expert they were entitled to, period. That's it. School's out. If they hire an expert, then they are immune. That's their position. That's the position that is unmistakably clear in all of the briefing that has been done by State Farm Lloyds and the amicus brief. That as long as their people are, quote, arguably certificated or authenticated in any way, then no one can impeach them whatsoever. In this case in particular, we actually, even prior to that, have recommendations as things that need to be done. They aren't done before Hague Engineer issues a report that was expected and anticipated. And then there is promptly issued an adoption of that report to the exclusion of consideration of any further testing or anything else at that point.
Let's say that Hague Engineering had conducted the test that you say it failed to perform, and good lawyer's trial argues, well, you know, that's all sort of window dressing, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. This is an insurance company, and everyone knows insurance companies are in the business to make money. And the way that one way they make money is by denying claims. And, of course, the insured is always interested in collecting on a claim, and thus the inherent tension. But even if Hague had done all the investigation that you say they should have done but did not do in this case, but you argue that based sort of on the nature, the inherent nature of insurance companies, that they're always out to beat claims, that's going to present a fact issue on bad faith.
I am not arguing that plaintiff's lawyer should be entitled to stand or claimant should be entitled to stand before the jury and argue that this is an insurance company and that's evidence enough of bad faith. Even though that argument could certainly be made and probably has been made. But that is not what our position is, and it's not what is necessary for our position in this case. We have an unusual situation in that we have a concession by the person who set out to deny the claim, that he hired someone different that he expected to render a report in favor of the denial of coverage. Then, after it was done, continued at all times thereafter to adopt that report to the exclusion of anything else. And our position is that's sufficient by far to raise a fact question on the issue of whether or not this was a bona fide or manufactured dispute. If we cannot litigate the issue of sham disputes, there is no bad faith in this state. Thank you, Your
Honor. Any other questions? Thank you.
Mr. McLaren, do you concede that there is some evidence in the record indicating, I'm sorry, Van Heusen, I'm sorry, I got the wrong name. Do you concede that there's some evidence in the record that raises a question as to the reliability of the Hague Engineering's report?
As far as the reasonableness of State Farm to depend upon that report?
No, sir, just the reliability of the report itself. The argument being that there is evidence in the record that Hague Engineering bases this report solely upon scientific literature that says generally foundation problems are not the result of plumbing leaks, and the testimony of Hague engineers that they didn't perform any of those tests that would demonstrate whether or not this particular foundation problem was the result of plumbing leaks or have the general conditions. The argument being that the testimonial evidence indicates the engineers didn't do that which engineers would have done to, justify the report that these general conditions were extant at this time.
No, I absolutely don't agree with that.
Okay.
I don't know if the court's had an opportunity to review the actual reports involved. Mr. Dodson alluded to some of the things they did, which in fact went further than the experts which the plaintiffs were relying upon in this case. They did things, for example, like examining the door entries to see whether or not there's any evidence of the foundation having moved since construction. They did patterns to determine whether or not the heating that the plaintiffs were claiming was consistent with a leak where the plaintiffs were claiming a leak occurred. They went through a fairly exhaustive analysis. And not only did they do that, but also after State Farm asked them to reconsider, they took additional facts into consideration to see whether their opinion needed to be altered.
Was the concession made by the State Farm agent that hired the engineering company? Mr. McMaines argues that he hired them for this purpose because he knew they usually came up with reports that served as a basis for denying claims. I got a serious question with that one. Did they do core samples or soil samples? Well, go ahead. Did they pursue any of the investigations, investigatory routes that were recommended by the first engineers on the job?
They reviewed the data from those engineers.
Were recommending additional testing, were they not?
Not that I recall in that context. What they needed was to determine a pattern of relationship between the leak that was claimed and what was happening to the house. And what Mr. Dodson said a minute ago.
Before the fourth one, I'd almost forgotten the condensation.
Response. If I forget any of these, please remind me to pick them up. I think I can answer all of them. Going with the condensation thing, there was some disagreement about how the water would get around the house. It turns out in the evidence that there was an even moisture level basically through the entire foundation.
Now, is this about the gentleman who apparently was one of State Farm's witnesses who said, or at least I guess he worked for the engineers, I'm not sure, one of their testing people who said that the finding that concentration of moisture could have been caused by condensation was ludicrous. Was that in the record? Is that really in the record?
That is in the record, but it's out of context to an extent because the engineer that said that came to the same conclusion, as it turns out, that Haig came to in terms of the movement of the house. That's an example of sort of pulling things out of context to an extent. And the dispute, I realize that you don't spend your days worrying about houses in Corpus Christi moving up and down, but the claim was made by one of the plaintiff's expert was that this water, in order to explain why it was migrating where it wouldn't logically want to go, namely uphill, that somehow there was a lens of sand underneath the building, and that the sand somehow conducted the water. The problem being there was, and this is in the context of the discussion you mentioned, that they have to go around underneath beams, in addition to flowing uphill, and some of the soil samples taken by plaintiff's experts showed that there wasn't any sand there in certain areas. So that was in the context of the discussion of the sand lens is what you're talking about. Do you want me to discuss some of these other points about the validity of the opinions?
Very briefly, if you respond.
If I can, without offending the court on time. I wanted to address very briefly the idea of the sham was discussed. Some points that have not been raised are the fact that, first of all, it was unanimous among engineers that the UT Arlington study was a reliable source to rely upon, which says that this type of movement does not typically occur because of plumbing leaks of this sort. There were seven engineers who testified, four of whom agreed with what the Haig conclusions were. The pattern of the moisture and the heaving did not match with the leak that they claimed. There was uniform moisture under the house. It was not spotty as would be expected where you had a point leak. And Mr. Cooper, who you talked about, asked me about a second ago, when you're talking about the predisposition, if you read the entire quote, he says, generally they're predisposed in that way, but sometimes they find it, sometimes they don't. That's the entire context of that statement.
And last there was other evidence that they never found it, right? Or there was no evidence that they ever did?
No, I think that on cross-examination, if you look at roughly page 300 or so of the record.
Referring back to Mr. McMaine's argument that they couldn't recite one incident or recall one incident where they'd ever...
In fact, plaintiff's very first witness in about page 300 roughly of the statement of facts talks about other Haig engineers finding relationships, so that on the face of the record is not so. And lastly, I want to point out to the court that their witnesses agreed to the proposition that experts in this area can disagree.
We have, and I'm going to summarize this, if I might, very briefly. Basically, the plaintiffs want to turn this into a contract type analysis. They say, well, if State Farm's wrong, we're allowed to make the leap over to the breach of duty of good faith. There's something more required under Lyons, and as I read Lyons, there is some protection that is afforded to insurance companies to sometimes not be in agreement with their insureds without facing basically a death penalty. Simply
I think
because
that's gone beyond the nature of the business.
All right. Thank you very much.
Are there any other questions? Thank you, sir. The court will take another brief recess.
Your Honor, you're right.